Eileen Lane interviewing Bernard Halpern. Okay, we were discussing the relationship with David Lawrence.
And he praised the people like Julius Halpern for their initiative and for their promotion of the economy of the Pittsburgh area.
What about, weren't some of the other influential people in Pittsburgh at the time members of the Mellon and the Skay family? Did your father have relationships with them?
Not particularly, no.
Was
he had a relationship with the key officers of the Mellon Bank. And I remember, I told you that he asked for Mellon's approval on his going back into the banking business. And he had asked the question of one of the vice presidents of the bank that he had a relationship with. And the word had come back from this vice president, yes, go ahead. And he said, who said so? And this fellow named one of the senior officers at Mellon Bank. And I remember my father saying to him, no, that isn't good enough. I want Frank Denton to approve it. Now, Frank Denton was a man who, during that period, really ran Mellon Bank. So, although R.K. Mellon was the nominal head, he was in an ivory tower. He may have been running overall policies of the bank, but the day-to-day operations and even important long-range policies, the active direction of the bank was Frank Denton's.
But essentially your relationship and your father's relationship with other bankers in Pittsburgh was with chief executive officers of those banks.
I would say he had no relationship with any other bankers in Pittsburgh. He ran his bank the way he wanted to run his bank, and he felt that some of the other banks were too mechanical, and he felt that those other people had no great interest in him. He was never one for joining associations and going to conventions and things like that. I don't think that he ever went to a banker's convention, for example.
Do you think any of that has to do with the fact that he was Jewish?
No, I don't think so. He just, I think to some extent he regarded it as a waste of time. I know that after I became active in commercial bank, for a few years I would go to bankers' conventions and to some meetings, but I gradually concluded that they too were largely a waste of time.
Okay.
There is some advantage in having a relationship, but for years now I have encouraged some of my officers to have relationships with their counterparts at some of the other banks. And on that level, we can exchange information about specific customers, make some inquiries, get some help from our correspondent banks, but I don't find any great need to have important relationships at top levels with other banks.
Do you think that during the time that you were commercial bank and then Keystone Bank, you were looked upon as a Jewish bank?
Probably.
But that's no longer true?
No, that's no longer true.
Were there advantages to that kind of association or disadvantages?
I would say there are some advantages and some disadvantages.
Such as?
Well, one obvious disadvantage is in the Gentile community, if you're looked on as a Jewish bank, Gentiles may be less inclined to do business with you. I think that there is an almost equal disadvantage in the Jewish community. As banking went retail and the non-Jewish directed banks looked for even smaller customers and they looked to broaden their base, they became much more receptive to doing business with Jews than they had been in the past. And as they opened their doors to Jewish customers, I feel that many Jews felt that it was a greater advantage to them and perhaps an honor to them to be regarded as a good customer of a non-Jewish bank, where it was nothing to be a customer of a Jewish bank.
Has that hurt you?
No, I don't think it's hurt us. But I do know that we never established to the same extent the the dominance that the Washington Trust Company had in the Jewish market.
Do you think
on the other hand, we have had many more non-Jewish customers, and in some measure, non-Jewish customers are easier to deal with than Jewish customers.
Do you think this is also a function of how the Jewish community here has changed and become different?
I think, in part, yes. I think that as more... No, I don't know if that... No, I'm not so sure if it represents a change in the part of the Jewish community. I was going to say that perhaps there are more prominent or larger enterprises that are led by Jews, but I don't think that's true. There were some significant large enterprises that were led by Jews. But the very largest of them were never customers of the Washington Trust Company.
Okay. And what about your political involvement? Have you had much political involvement in Pittsburgh?
No. I make political contributions, but that's it. I really have felt that, particularly since I've been active the past 20 years in banking, that I have to abstain from direct political involvement.
But isn't certain political involvement also expected of you as a leading businessman as well? Isn't it to your advantage?
I don't know. I have not followed that path.
Okay. Getting back...
I would rather be known as a factor in the business area, which politicians have to recognize, than as a political activist.
Okay, let's get back to your father's communal involvement. You've told me before that he was involved in Beth Sholem,
yeah,
and in the Jewish philanthropies. What was it called here?
Well, I know at one time there was a Federation of Jewish Philanthropies. I don't know what the history of what is now the Federation is concerned, but I guess it was in the late 40s that an organization, I guess it had been called the United Jewish Fund, which probably dealt with national and overseas Jewish agencies, and not local agencies. I think that organization had been created in the mid-30s to make a combined campaign. And there was also an organization called the Federation of Jewish Philanthropies, which dealt with local agencies. To the best of my recollection, in the late 40s, those two organizations merged under the name United Jewish Federation.
And your father was involved in that merger process?
I guess that his principal activities had been on behalf of the United Jewish Fund, which was the overseas element of it. I think that he had briefly been on the board of Montefiore Hospital. I know that he was active in the Jewish Home and Hospital for Aging. But I think that his principal interest had been in the fund, which was overseas operations. I don't know to what role he played in the merger, if any. He may have played a role.
And do you remember what his activities were after the merger? This is at the time of his mercantile dinners continued
then? His mercantile dinners continued after the merger.
And what about his other activities through the 50s?
He continued active, particularly in campaigning. I don't know. I don't know whether he was on the board of the Federation. I'm not sure of that. I think that he, during the early 50s, as I recall, he was mostly active in Beth Sholem, and he continued his mercantile division dinners, and he would always take cards in the campaign, and. He used his position in the bank sometimes in order to extract larger contributions from people.
Did he ever visit Israel?
No.
Can I ask you, was there any dichotomy in this community that he might have felt between earlier and later waves of immigration, the German immigration?
I'm sure he felt a dichotomy between the German wave of immigration and the later Eastern European wave of immigration.
How did that affect his activities in the community?
I imagine that early, when he had been, I guess, invited, I have to say this goes back to the earlier middle 30s and before I was really aware of things, but as a successful businessman, he had been probably invited by the German Jewish leadership of a charitable activity to be a contributor and to sit in on planning and direction and be made a board member of something or other, and he probably was flattered by that. And that probably initiated his active involvement.
Because it meant that he had made it in this country?
I guess, yeah. That's an impression I have. He never said that to me.
Do you think he felt entirely comfortable within that environment?
No, I don't think he felt entirely comfortable in that environment.
Did he voice that to you?
No, but I'm putting two and two together.
What leads you to believe that?
Well, his relationships with his lawyers, first Charles Sachs and later Louis Kaplan, they were members of the establishment. He would never call them by their first name, and I never heard Mr. Sachs ask him to. But later, after Charles Sachs died, Louis Kaplan became his attorney. And Louis would call him Julius, and he would call him Mr. Kaplan, and Louis would say to him, "Julius, please call me Lou." And Julius would say, "Yes, Lou." And then 2 minutes later, he'd say, "Mr. Kaplan," again. There was a fence between them.
And this extended up to the time, throughout his life?
Really throughout his life.
When do you think that this kind of attitude dissipated in the community?
I don't know when it dissipated. I guess it dissipated at various times for various people. I myself was conscious of it. For example, I was conscious of the fact in 1966, when I became president of Montefiore Hospital, that except perhaps for somebody who may have been president back in the early 1900s when the hospital was a small institution that had just been created, that I really was the first non-German who had been president of the hospital. I also remember an occasion when it was the year that you were confirmed, or maybe a year before you were confirmed. There was some kind of a function at the Rotorschule involving either the graduating class or the next graduating class and the parents. And I remember the four or five of the parents were asked to involve themselves in some kind of a playlet, which produced some sort of statements of philosophic principles. And I remember that Max Bluestone and I were members of this group of parents. And as we drove down to the temple in the evening of this particular performance, both of us were struck by the fact, what were two Eastern European Jewish descendants like Max and I doing at Rotorschule participating in this playlet?
What do you think you were doing at Rotorschule?
But it seemed anomalous to us. But let's say it obviously represented a stage of dissolution of the old dichotomy.
And what about your own involvement in the community? When did you first become active, and how did you become active? In what areas?
I really forget that I may have been active in some way before this, but I have a recollection that in the early 1950s that I participated in a leadership development course at the then fairly new Federation. As I recall it, the Federation had in effect done a study of itself. It had had a very successful campaign in 1948, the year of the creation of the State of Israel. Campaign the next couple of years sloughed off drastically. The leadership of the Federation was pretty much, by that time, sort of an inbred older leadership.
Of the German Jews?
Partly German, partly others.
Okay.
But whatever it was, mostly German, but whatever it was, it had been there a long time. And there really had been no great effort to bring in younger people. In a way, I think the younger people had been away during the war. But in any event, the Federation, I think, determined that it had to develop young leadership. And I participated. And of course, as I recall it, some of my contemporaries in that course were Lester Hamburg, Alvin Rogel, who later became presidents of the Federation. But you must remember that Alvin's father, in particular, Haim, had always been active in the Jewish community, been active in the Young Men and Women's Hebrew Association, which is now the Jewish Community Center. But I think that there were more non-German Jews who began to take a role at that time than there were German Jews.
Because they were successful businessmen?
Perhaps that was so, yeah.
Was this the...
They became the... not the largest givers, but they became the... They became much larger givers. And except for a handful of German Jews, the German Jewish community declined in their economic importance.
Was this the first course of its type,
I think so. I think so.
And what were you, what did you do? What was it intended that you do?
I forget what it was intended that I do, but I know that I became active after that. And I forget exactly in what role. But it seems to me that soon after that, I became active in social planning and budgeting at the Federation. I was on the board of the hospital within a few years of that time. And those are my dominant recollections. I really don't remember anything significant.
And have they remained your dominant activities as well?
Yes, the Federation has continued to be my dominant activity, although it led to other roles.
Were you active in any congregations?
No, although when I came home from the service, I joined Road of Shalom to the consternation of my father, who had been somewhat active at Beth Shalom. In 1954, which was 8 years later, he became president of Beth Shalom. I figured that it was not proper that he should be president and I should even be a member. So ever since, I've been a member of both congregations, except for 1 year when I dropped out of Road of Shalom because I was very unhappy with their policies and I submitted my resignation. And I returned only at the instance of Alan Berkman, who had become president of Road of Shalom and told me that it was wrong for me not to be a member. Because Alan was my friend, I rejoined. Getting back to what I'd been active in, I must have been on the board of Montefiore Hospital in 1956 or thereabouts, because I remember at that time being interviewed by Tony Rourke, who was a consultant who was brought in by Montefiore to study the future role of Montefiore in the community and what directions it should be heading in. And I remember telling him, among other things, that I thought that the board meetings at Montefiore were, for the most part, a waste of time. That they generally went through a rather crowded agenda of committee reports, and there was never any forward-looking discussion of policies or directions for the hospital. I guess it was about 19, must have been active in the Social Planning and Budgeting Committee, or whatever it was called at that time. It may have had a different name of the Federation. Because in 1962 or 63, I became chairman of that committee. Well, let's see, I had been chairman of a, at that time it operated through subcommittees, and it had a subcommittee on, I guess it was called Health Needs, or Health Agencies. I was chairman of that subcommittee. Because in that role, I became chairman of an ad hoc committee, which was created around 1960 or 61, probably 1959 or 1960, to study the health needs of the aged. And was as the work, result of the work of that committee that the institution like Riverview was created, and certain other services to the aged, like homemaker services, were created. I remember because of that, the Federation in 1960 was asked to suggest appropriate delegates to the White House Conference on Aging, and I was a delegate to that conference. That was in 1960. It was because of my involvement in this as chairman of the Committee on the Health Needs for the Aged. I guess it was 1962 or 63 I became chairman of the Social Planning and Budgeting Committee.
And how long did you serve in that?
I served in that role until 1966, when I was elected president of Montefiore Hospital. I then resigned from Social Planning and Budgeting Committee because the two roles would be a conflict of interest.
And both of these areas you've been associated with since that time?
More or less, yeah. Oh, I've been a I've been a trustee of Montefiore Hospital ever since. I guess after a few years, I became a life trustee.
What?
I've generally been a member of the board of the Federation, although I've gone off on rotation a couple of times.
What happened under your presidency of Montefiore Hospital that you feel should be remembered?
The two most significant things that I accomplished when I was president of Montefiore Hospital was I succeeded in having the bylaws amended to limit the term of the president to 3 years. Before that, although some president, most presidents had died in office, and my immediate predecessor had served something like 15 or 17 years. I don't think that's good for an institution. And although he was an able man, by the time he retired from the presidency, he was also an old man. And I think he had lost his drive and his initiative.
What was
the other thing was that I was able to effect the entrance of Montefiore into the health center, affiliation with the medical school, a more direct affiliation than Montefiore had enjoyed before. That's an interesting story. I mean, maybe you might hear it. As I understand the situation, Leon Falk, even as a young man in the late 20s, naturally as a Jew had an interest in Montefiore Hospital, but he also had a keen interest in the University of Pittsburgh. And he attempted to have Montefiore affiliate with the medical school in the late 20s when Montefiore built its then new building on its present site. And Montefiore rejected that idea, due largely to the influence, as I understand it, of its staff, medical staff. And Leon, I think, was annoyed by this and probably was annoyed with Montefiore Hospital ever after that. In 1967 or 68, Montefiore was proposing a capital expansion program, or a continuation of one that had started in 1960, and it had to appear before the board of what was called the Hospital Planning Association, which was a...
Is that Western Pennsylvania?
The Hospital Planning Association had been founded by the large corporations and foundations to validate capital projects. And those projects which it validated would be in line for large corporate and foundation contributions. And those which it did not validate would not be in line. The effort was to prevent unneeded capital expansion of healthcare facilities. It was really a voluntary organization. But by the late 60s, it had acquired a quasi-governmental status because at that the agency, was it the federal government, recognized the judgments of the Hospital Planning Association as being appropriate for the disbursement of Hilburton funds for hospital construction. And a hospital which had Hospital Planning Association approval could get Hilburton funds. And one which didn't would not get Hilburton funds. The Montefiore wanted Hilburton funds, and that's why we were appearing before this body. Part of the proposed expansion included new operating suites, new laboratories, and other things appropriate to the kind of activity that goes on in a teaching hospital. Montefiore had always been a teaching hospital, but without a formal university medical school relationship. At this appearance before the Hospital Planning Association, we were asked why we needed these labs and operating rooms and the like, and I spoke of our growing involvement with the medical school, although we had no direct affiliation. We did have a relationship. And he said, if this is the way you go, don't you think that you should apply for affiliation with the medical school and for membership in the health center? And I said, no, I don't think that we should apply for it. It might be appropriate that we should be asked to join. And that was the end of the discussion that day. But the next day, I got a telephone call from Leon Falk, who was a member of that board of the Hospital Planning Association. And although he had not been present at the meeting, somebody must have reported what went on there. And he called me and said, if you were asked, would you join? So I said, Mr. Falk, that's a legitimate question. Let me find the answer to that. So I then called a special meeting of the board and of the medical executive committee of the staff. And at both of these meetings, I got an expression from both of these groups within the hospital that if we were asked to affiliate with the medical school, that we would accept. And I carried that word back to Leon Falk, and in short order, we were asked, and we then proceeded to negotiate a contract of affiliation.
So, and the dates from when?
About 1967 or 68. Now, the actual agreement was signed in late 69. My term as president was up in October of 69. So it was my successor as president, Lester Hamburg, who signed the first contract.
But you
later. But the negotiations have been conducted by me and by Irv Goldberg.
How, in your association since the 50s with both of these institutions, first the Federation, how do you see the Federation as having changed in this community?
I think the Federation has broadened its base, both in leadership and in contributors. I think that it has reached out more effectively to younger people, and many more of them are involved. I think that it's more sophisticated in its techniques.
What about its associations locally with agencies and its relationship overseas?
I don't see any significant change.
What about social planning and budgeting process? Has that changed over this period of time?
The mechanics of it have changed somewhat. The budgeting is done earlier. There's pre-campaign budgeting. The old system of a main committee and several subcommittees, which dealt with discrete areas of subsidization, has been changed. There's now only one committee. But essentially, the role of the committee is the same.
What about the hospital? How has it changed over this time?
The hospital has gone through an interesting history, which we can't get into, but the relationship with the medical school has always been somewhat strained. It was inevitable that it would be strained because with Montefiore entering the health center and becoming affiliated with the medical school, it meant that for the first time there were two